judiciary this morning. What, just a little over 30, just a little under 39 hours to go. If you'll put yourself on the record, we'd like to take a look at what happened to the version while it was in the House over there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Janet Seitz, staff to Representative Norman Rothberg. The version that passed the House had two changes made to it as opposed to the Senate version that was last before you, Mr. Chairman, which was...
We had version
the
hotel,
H version,
right.
I think. And though, so the only two changes that are occurring in 563 that weren't in 397 are on page 2, the end of line 15 through line 23, and this is where who appoints the replacements to the disqualified members when there's a group complaint. And what the new language here says is that if the disqualified members are part of the majority caucus, then the presiding officer shall appoint. If they're part of the minority caucus, then the minority leader shall appoint. And the other change was to the definition of caucus on lines 29 and 30, and we added some commas in there. So it reads that it's a group of legislators who share a political philosophy, comma, or who have a common goal, comma, and who organize as a group. And those were the only differences from the Senate Bill 397H version that the committee considered at the last meeting.
Okay. So now, in the appointing process, we do have we've inserted in there that also the minority caucus leader should appoint the other house, from the other house, the member.
The minority, if the disqualified members are minority members, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, questions? Senator Terrio?
Through the chairman, yes, it was a floor amendment that was agreed to by Representative Rothberg.
Offered by who? Offered by the minority?
No, actually, it was offered by... Representative Rothberg had offered an amendment to clarify some languages that was discussed in this committee on member versus members and some cleanup language that the Senate committee wanted to offer. And then during the floor debate, Representative Guerra and others pointed out that it would be better in their view that if it was a minority member involved, that the minority leader should appoint the person to take the disqualified member's position, and Representative Rothberg agreed. So,
I'm having a little problem following the language of it.
On page 2.
Yeah.
If the majority, if the disqualified members are part of the majority caucus, the presiding officer of the house in which the disqualified members serve shall appoint another member of that house to serve on the committee with regard to the complaint.
Right.
Otherwise, the minority caucus leader shall appoint the member.
This, Mr. Chairman, this is when, say, not the entire, the complaint is not filed against an entire caucus, but maybe just the members of that caucus who serve on the ethics committee are part of the group the complaint is filed against. Then the first step is to appoint, for example, if the House majority members were disqualified, then the presiding officer would appoint another member from the House majority to sit in on that group complaint. If the minority members were disqualified, then it would be the minority leader. And then the second part goes into if it's all members of the caucus, for example, all members of the majority caucus, so all members of the majority caucus would be disqualified from participating on the ethics committee in regards to that complaint.
What if the complaint goes against a coalition of the caucus, where part of the members are majority and part of the members are minority? In that case, the minority caucus leader shall appoint the member. follow me? If a complaint is alleged against a group that includes minority and majority caucus members, the otherwise indicates that it would be the minority caucus leader to do the appointing, because the only way the majority, the presiding officer is if they're all members of one caucus.
I'm trying to think, Mr. Chairman, of how that scenario in my work and my brain is dead.
We're all in that boat.
What group? How you'd get minority and majority members in a group where all four legislators serving on the ethics committee are disqualified.
Let's talk about the old, everybody throws up, the ad hoc group called the Fiscal Caucus, which may have had members of both parties, and they had a secret meeting that violated the Ethics Act somehow or another. I'm not sure if you can do that or not with this, with the way we're set up.
I see what you're saying.
And if that was the case, then if there's minority and majority members that are involved, the minority caucus leader is the one who appoints the other.
Right, all right, I see what you're getting
at. If there's a single minority member in that group where the complaint is alleged, it's the minority caucus leader that does the appointing.
I see what you're saying now.
I see where you're trying to go. Mm-hmm. We're trying to say,
and this is the language that
I know.
Legal gave us when we told them where we wanted to go.
Am I confusing myself here?
I'm trying to follow along here. The disqualified members. And so what you're talking about there is the members that serve on the ethics committee. If the majority members, let's just clean up the language for ease. If the majority members are disqualified, the presiding officer shall appoint other majority members to take their place. If it's not the majority members that are disqualified, being Mary Kapsner, the minority member, then the minority leader will replace them.
That's right.
Okay. Now, did you come up with a scenario?
What if it's a combination? What if the complaint is against two majority and one minority member?
Norm Roper and Mary Kapsner?
Right.
They held the illegal meeting?
Yep.
Well, for this to kick in, Mr. Chairman, it'd have to be Representative Roper and Representative Hines and Representative Kapsner and Representative Fertula.
Well, I would think then the sentence would operate that if they disqualified, it says members, that implies all of them.
I think what we're trying to get to here, if I'm correct, is that if all the members in one house of the majority caucus are part of the complaint, it's brought against all the entire caucus, then the presiding officer appoints from the other body who the presiding officer wants to appoint to be the replacement.
Right.
If it's all against the minority caucus and none of the majority members are involved, then the minority caucus leader gets to do the appointment. Is that what we're after?
Right, that's what we were after. I don't think they envisioned a case.
And that's how the drafters have crafted this to try to accomplish that goal?
I don't think they envisioned a case where all four legislative members of either body serving on the Ethics Committee would be disqualified.
Right. I know. I can see that, too. But we're just saying if it's Caucus A's ox that's being gored, then Caucus A gets to appoint from the other body. If it's all Caucus B's ox that's being gored, then Caucus B gets to appoint the replacements from the other body that represent their caucus. So if that's the intent, and it's very clear on the record that that's what we're doing, and that was how the drafters were instructed to draft this, then I don't have a problem with it.
That was, Mr. Chairman.
Do we all understand that that's basically what how this is interpreted? I don't see any dissent from the other members. Other questions?
Chairman, does it help if on line 16, instead of members, you just talk about a single member, so the sentence would operate on a member by member?
Mr. Chairman, Secretary, I don't think so, because there actually are a member and an alternate from each caucus on the committee. So for these provisions to kick in, both the member and the alternate have to be disqualified, because otherwise the alternate would be the person serving.
And it strictly says, it gives within that body the opportunity for the majority or the leader of that caucus to do the appointing of who replaces the disqualified person. I don't have any objection to that. Do you guys have a problem with that? No? Excuse my cold here. Okay. That's the only question, only differences between...
That and the change of the definition on lines 29 and 30, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right, and that's just the insertion of the comma. Two commas. Okay. Let's just go off the record for a minute. Record? Okay, we now have a version that was of House Bill 563 that, in comparison with Senate Bill 397, has been amended by the House. And so at this point, I'm going to set aside Senate Bill 397 from further consideration. And we have one person that's indicated they want to testify on the bill. If you'll hang tight for a minute, Janet. And Merle Thompson is on the line. Merle has already testified on House Bill 397, but since this is House Bill 563, I will allow Merle the same time that we had on Senate Bill 397. So, Merle, are you with us this morning?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay, and we have a two-minute limit on testimony, so go right ahead whenever you're ready, sir.
Okay, I haven't totally gone over this newest CS to the House bill, but it's looking to be along the same lines as the other. It has some certain problems with it as far as the page, it is 5 now, and the complaint dismissal part of it, that's still... right to government if we disagree with these things. I actually went through and spoke to a number of people in my neighborhood and in a couple associations yesterday, and they had no idea that this bill was even in there, but I think you'd be pretty interested to know that those folks think that this is just outrageous. I showed you a copy of the bill and explained to them. And I also showed them a copy of testimony. The folks out here just think that this is crazy that the legislature is trying to write the rules that the legislature has to go by. As I said in previous testimony, that the best place for this type of bill to be written or come out of anyway would be the committee, the ethics committee, because of its balance. It has 5 members of the public and 2 members from each house. This is a committee of one where this bill's coming from, and it's just not the best place to address this. You have to have the trust of the people, the respect of the people, and that's written into the code. And by having a Fox guarded in and out, that's not showing us any respect, and it's certainly not going to get our trust. And that's the most important thing here. And I'll let you go with that.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Go ahead, Senator Terrio.
I think the other day we had a comparison was made of the fact of an ethics complaint being made, and while it's being reviewed, that it's kept confidential. Comparison was made to a grand jury. If the grand jury is reviewing the complaint, while members of the public, the general public, people making the allegation to prosecutor are reviewing that and taking it to grand jury deliberation, it's kept confidential. And I guess I see this as the same way. Because there is a potential for abuse, that the mere allegation of an ethics violation is being made against somebody as a political weapon, the suggestion is that until the ethics committee has a chance to review it, you don't want to set the committee up and the process up as a political tool. And so I guess I don't understand the objection from this individual. Is he suggesting that the grand jury system is somehow going against the will of the people? It's a long-standing tradition that you don't necessarily let just a potential criminal allegation taint somebody until a group of citizens have the chance to review it and see if it's got some merit. And it seems to me that that's exactly what's being proposed here.
Thank you, Mr. Senator Terrio. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on this bill in the audience this morning? Anyone else online? Public testimony is closed. I agree, Senator Terrio. The operating procedures of the legislature are very clear. They're set out in Mason's Manual, and where they're not set out in Mason's Manual, they're in our uniform rules. And the requirements under this bill are very public, and they're there for everyone to read. The procedures and processes that are there are public. They're not private. People can always suggest additional rules for the people to consider. I don't know of any body in the country, including the United States government, that allows someone else to prescribe the operating rules for the body, other than the rules themselves, the body itself. So I don't have any problem with this, and I don't have a problem either with the fact that if someone wants to use an ethics complaint for political purposes to try to harm an individual who's sitting, they should not be able to do so by announcing their complaint, in the media. If you have a complaint, if it's a legitimate complaint, bring it to the proper process. Let the process do its work. If the ethics committee, which is a bipartisan committee that's confirmed by the legislature, nominated by the administration, if they feel that there's something to the complaint, later on the matter can become public at that point in time. But I have a great suspicion of those people who would like to say, I ought to be able to tell the whole world that I'm bringing an ethics complaint against this person. At that point, I begin to doubt the reason why someone brought the complaint in the first place. Let the process do its work, and if there is truly a violation, it'll eventually come to the surface. If there's not, it will not be something that an individual has to needlessly defend against. That's how the grand jury system works. That's how this system works. Both of them are a good system. Is there further discussion on the bill? Senator Ogun.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had listened to the testimony earlier and had suggested a way to maybe deal with the issue of confidentiality, and while I don't disagree in any way with what two gentlemen have said, I want to state for the record that I tried very hard to get the bill amended in the other body to allow basically a collection of or allow the ethics committee to assess the administration costs of a complaint process against somebody that files a frivolous complaint. And it was unfortunately the debate went on pretty long. It was very late, and additional amendments weren't able to be considered, I think, because it was midnight or something when they
got right.
And this requires a title change on this, on this side. And a title change at this point would fill the bill. So I just want to state for the record that I won't be objecting to the bill moving out. I would offer the amendment here, but it would take a title change and would kill the bill. But I think that's a principle that we use in civil law. If you file a frivolous lawsuit, then you pay the other side's attorney's fees.
Right.
And I think that's might be a little more rational way to do it. That wouldn't, I mean, if somebody wants to go out and file a frivolous complaint, I suppose they'd, and they'd not only be liable for attorney's fees, but they'd be subject to civil action somewhere else, which I don't think is unreasonable, because there's a lot of people that manipulate the various political processes to defame people.
Right. And,
but I did want to state for the record that I'm going to recommend that we amend the bill on my individual recommendation.
Okay. Is there further discussion on the bill? Any more questions for the sponsor, for Janet? Hearing none, thank you, Janet. We'll close discussion, and what is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Terrio.
I would move the House CS for House Bill 563, Judiciary Amended, effective date added from committee with individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the bill is moved on to the next committee. Thank you very much for your help today, Janet. The next item on our agenda is House Bill 552. We're going to open up the public testimony portion of the bill. And who would like to be first on the issue? I don't have a sign-up sheet. Mr. Perry?
Yes.
Come on up, Mr. Green. If you'll put yourself on the record, welcome to Judiciary Committee this morning.
Thank you.
We'll hear your testimony, sir.
Time, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Just a brief at ease here. Record. Mr. Green, welcome again.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Judiciary Committee. My name is Harry Green. I'm an Anchorage taxpayer. And for the record, my affiliation is I'm here to help solve the fiscal gap. That's how I got into this. And that's why I have pursued this. Little did I realize we'd have $40 a barrel oil, but I don't believe that's going to be the case for much longer. The issue of churches and morality always comes up in the debate on gambling. As I see it, gambling should be an individual's choice. I consider myself a religious person. I attend services regularly and financially support my own congregation and several others. Also, four of my five children attended not only religious primary schools, but high school, and three of them went to a religious college. I think churches and gaming has a record of existing together. And I think Las Vegas, if you want to see the most full churches, one only needs to go to the city of Las Vegas. I would further say that it's been a while since gaming was talked about in a serious manner here. And since I've started this, I'd like to tell you some of the phone calls I've had in support of this and the overwhelming poll results that have come in, whether it be a television news poll or down on the Kenai on a radio poll. And these are people that I did not solicit to call in, no organized effort for that. I made some calls, however, to please send a fax to the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, if they would. And of the 48 calls that I made, only one person was against it and said, "Perry, you have the wrong idea about it." And I said, "Well, I believe it's right, and I think it's borne out that we have to quit thinking locally and we have to start thinking globally." Since I've been in Juneau, I've received calls from three continents because they know that the promise of Alaska, the tourism of Alaska, is a lot more than what you all realize. And I think this is an economic issue, and I think it's a jobs issue. It's not a gaming issue. If people want a game, they can game. You could sit in my hotel room and I can win $200,000 sitting in the Baranoff Hotel. I've watched programs on gaming. I watched a advertisement on the state of Mississippi while I was there. The second thing they showed was gaming in Mississippi. While we have a fiscal gap here, the state of Mississippi, which is not noted for great schools, is increasing their school budget. And why? Because they have instituted gaming, and their social costs have not been a problem since they have done it. People who have been on welfare are now having real jobs. 70% of the food stamp program is also has been eliminated in the Tunica area, where the poorest county was in Mississippi. Our forestry is a shadow of its former self. Our fisheries are down. Even oil is down. In fact, oil pays 88% of our state budget, as you well know. The state of Nevada has no oil, and yet they are not looking at increased tax revenues except from their casinos. Even with their increase in their revenue, their percentage that they collect is one-third of what Bill 552 calls for, one-third. And this is double what the state of California now receives in revenue from their casinos. I'm personally familiar with the Coachella Valley. I live 5 minutes from a casino there, and I want to tell you there's 100,000 people in the leisure industry. The leisure industry is the largest industry in the world today, even bigger than the military industry. We have 100,000 people in the Palm Springs area that are employed because of leisure. And it's a good industry, and it's a smokestack industry. You know, I know that some of you have children, and sometimes those children, when they go to sleep at night, they say, "Don't turn out the lights. They're afraid of the dark." And I think some of us who don't understand gambling and gaming are really afraid of the dark and don't know what it really can do for a facility. I know we're talking about juvenile facilities, we're talking about jails in Alaska. These are all government jobs. What I'm proposing is 1,000 private industry jobs. And I think that if people are concerned about creating income and economic development, which we certainly need in Alaska, they will look very strongly at this type of industry. And it is a growing industry and an accepted industry. It's an industry that public corporations and perhaps even many of the pension funds are interested in. If we're going to talk about addictions, and people talk about addictions, let's talk about credit cards, where 63% of all bankruptcies in the United States are the result of credit cards. 1.2% say they gambled within the last 2 weeks before they declared bankruptcy. So if we're going to worry about addiction, and Alaska has a lot of assault and abuse because people don't have jobs, and we need to create it. I want to go to the state of Louisiana, where I'm sure all of you are familiar with Kevin Jardel. He's an attorney and deputy commissioner of administration. He was against gambling until it came and really changed the state of Louisiana, and he's a big fan of gaming now. That he told me that as I was out in the hallway. And I think that it's safe to say that a majority of your constituents all are. And I think it's also safe to say that you can be opposed to gaming and still maintain your core values. But it's very much important that you create jobs, because that's what you're here for, to create good jobs that will make it possible for people to really make something out of their lives. I'd just like to say one thing, and I could go on and on. I'd like to tell you that since I've been here, I've been contacted from three continents interested in Alaska, even bigger than what I have. And I interviewed these people, and these people are very serious people and very wealthy people. They think globally, not locally. If we want to make jobs, if we are talking about, we're talking about taxation, income tax and sales tax and POMV, but your job, in my opinion, is to create economic development. Are there any questions?
Questions from the members? Senator Terrio.
I think that the three of us sitting here from just our conversations, part of the concern that we have is how passage of this bill would open up the state for proliferation of gaming under the Indian Game Regulatory Act. A memo here that I did have distributed to members that from our own legal department says it is impossible, in my opinion, for anyone to say that gaming will be limited to certain clearly identified portions of land areas of the state. No one knows exactly how much Indian land there is and where that Indian land is. It's clear, though, that the Vinatai decision does not provide the answer or comfort that some have alluded to in this regard. We also have a memo from Independent Counsel Don Mitchell, who works for both the House and Senate majority, that also cautions the legislature on taking any step. And while the individuals that Mr. Green is contacted who may be thinking of a casino in a specific spot in Anchorage, just one casino in Anchorage, we're the policy decision makers for the state of Alaska, and we have to keep our eye on whether that action opens up gaming uncontrolled. We basically turn control over that activity in the state of Alaska over to a federal agency, and we'll no longer be able to make the calls on behalf of the citizens and the legislature. That's why a number of years ago, the legislature even did away with charitable fundraising casino nights, because the roulette wheel where you're playing with paper money and all the proceeds go to a charity at the end of the evening, that could be used as legalized gambling in the state of Alaska, and under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act could throw the state open for the spread of gambling in a fashion that's the state no longer controls. So that's a real motivating factor for myself. Enough to the fact that we have independent counsel that advises us and watches the things that are being discussed in Congress, so that we make sure that the legislature continues to make the policy, set the policy in the state of Alaska with regards to gaming, and not some federal agency.
Mr. Chairman.
Right ahead, Ms. Green.
Senator Terrio, I also spent a lot of money getting legal opinions, and I have an opinion, but I also have a suggestion, and that was the sunset clause, if that is a concern for you, that it would be such a spread, and I think that the litigation would be so far down the line that nobody else would really try to do any gaming outside of Cake, Tlaloc, and Metlakatla. Right now, Metlakatla has gaming over and above the state maximum for those games, because it is an independent place and recognized as such. And Indian gaming in California has made it possible and taken a lot of people off of welfare. But the state must, in good conscience, enter into a contract with those Indian casinos that you were talking about, and they must pay the same percentage. That's why the percentage is actually 20%, and the state would get that money should people in other areas go into gaming. They have to have a state contract, and that's all. If you have it at 17% to the state, 3% to the borough, they also must pay that too, and should that be the case. But my focus is on Far East travelers. My focus is on international players. My focus is not to compete even with a small or a medium-sized Indian casino that would have to pay 20% of its proceeds to the state, because you, in the compact, every state that has a compact, Nevada has a compact, Connecticut has a compact with the Indians, they pay $500 million in the state of Connecticut, and so that is true everywhere. There is Indian gaming in other states, but there is also private gaming. Indian gaming is in Nevada, but I challenge you to find somebody who has visited an Indian gaming casino in the state of Nevada. Everybody goes to Bellagio or to Binion's or to the Hilton or the Sheraton. And that is the same in other places where they do have Indian land. I think your concerns and the litigation that would take place would be years and years. And there is a sunset provision in this legislation. And that sunset provision would scare anybody into not investing a lot of money in an area that doesn't have a real population base. And, you know, I can go back to 1989 to the one store in Alaska that contributed between $20 and $29 million a year to the state of Alaska in revenues from Asian tourists. And last year, that same store only paid the state $311,000, because we do not have that tourist base anymore. The Asians aren't here. They're the big spenders. In my little business plan that I made up with consultation with others, I figured that there would be $3 billion in retail sales, in the additional retail sales and taxes collected over a 10-year period throughout the state. And now I'm thinking maybe that might even be too low.
You said you got opinions from attorneys. Did you provide those? Did you provide
those written attorney? Yes, sir.
Opinions? I'm wondering about, you've talked about a lot of different states. How about the state of Washington? Every time I go down there, I see another casino, another casino, another casino, another casino. There's been a huge proliferation.
All right.
You don't anticipate the same thing would happen?
I would talk about the state of Washington. They're actually, those casinos you see are card casinos in the municipalities. A municipality can have pull tab kind of things, and they can have cards, and but they can't have machines like the Indians do.
There's huge proliferation of Indian gaming in Washington.
Well, but that's why if you start gaming like Nevada did, if you start gaming like New Jersey did, if you start and put it there, you know, I'm a member of the Safari Club. I don't go hunting, but I just believe in free choice. I'm a member of the NRA. I don't collect guns, don't have any use for them, but I think people should have the choice. And I think we need to give, if you know, this bill calls for approval by the people, and particularly in the area where it's going to be most affected, which is the Anchorage area. And everybody I talk to, oh, I hope you get it. Gee, I'd like to go there. And it's a social thing. I talked to Larry Howley, who's here. As he's a lobbyist. He represents, I don't think he's a lobbyist, I'm sorry. He represents the Alliance. And he said he's got relatives. They're not very well off, but they play the lottery. And he said, and they just, I just don't know how they can make it on their salary. Well, it's a dream they're playing, and it's what they look forward to. It's a pleasure for them to look at that and spend their money that way. You know, some people, they need a cigarette. Let them smoke, as far as I'm concerned. I don't smoke. I don't necessarily drink. People want to do it. The reason we have bars today, and people go to bars and pay twice the amount of money or three times the amount of money they can drink at home, it's a social thing. It's entertainment. And you're going to be entertaining the willing, and that's what you'll get. And you'll get a lot more money for this state and for this economy, and you won't have to be having these 12 o'clock midnight sessions that you all have been working hard for. And gambling isn't the answer, the total answer, for sure. But it is a step. It is a step in creating an economy that's sustainable, that it's a year-round thing.
Further questions, Senator Terrio?
Just and from the memo, this is the one from Don Mitchell. Talks about the legislature on page 5, enactment of House 522 can be expected to motivate numerous Alaska Native groups to file Class 3 gaming at ordinances with the National Indian Gaming Commission that will request the chairman of the commission to allow groups to conduct the kind of in casino-style gaming that the enactment will empower the Alaska Gaming Commission to have in Anchorage. It then talks about the process that IGRU goes through. Lengthy process and negotiation. When you get down to the end, if the state is disagreeing with the proliferation, at a certain point, the secretary, and that's Secretary of the Interior, shall unilaterally implement the compact, and the Indian tribe may conduct Class 3 gaming activities over the state's objection. So it's we completely lose control of that. So We have taken steps in the past to maintain that control over those lands. We don't know exactly what lands at this point would possibly be subject to this spread of this activity. And I gamble myself. I'm not a big gambler, but gambled across the United States, Europe, and Asia. And you go to the big central casino in the area. We know that in the state of Alaska, in some of the smaller villages that have very tenuous economies, there's a high level of a pull tab operation, probably beyond what the people in the community really can afford. And so I don't know that you're going to have a huge casino in Venati, but are you going to have a card room with a roulette wheel and people spending money there? I just think this is something that, because of IGRA in particular, if we open this Pandora's box, we just don't know what we're getting ourselves into.
Go
ahead. Senator Ogun first.
I think, Mr. Chairman, it was maybe 7 or 8 years ago, former Attorney General under Governor Knowles came in to the House caucus, you were there, Mr. President, and advised us that it was time to do away with Monte Carlo gaming because the way that the law was being interpreted. And it was a policy call we needed to make, whether or not we wanted a proliferation of casinos on potential native-owned lands. Venati answered a lot of questions, but it definitely, from what I've been told, definitely left open native allotments were not specifically addressed. So, and I don't mean that in any kind of disrespectful way. There's something evil or some evil intent or whatever. It's just, I think, a policy call of where we want to be as a state, and we look at some of the other problems associated with, widespread small-time casinos. Gambling is a relatively harmless activity for those that don't get addicted and that have disposable income. It's, you have the money. When I gamble, which is like once in a blue moon, I think I've gambled once in 10 years. I think I spent $5.15 at the last casino I was at. That's how much loose change I had in my pocket, basically, a couple bucks. Life's enough of a gamble for me. I take enough risks without throwing away my money. My philosophy is I figure out how much money I feel like spend, like going to a movie. I want to spend $20 on a movie for the night for my wife and I with popcorn and refreshments. That's the budget. But there's a lot of people that you see these people in these casinos that just sit there and just ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. It's like this mesmerizing thing, and I don't know anything about their backgrounds, but I don't know. There's a lot of other stuff associated with it too. For those that have disposable income, I guess it's a fun thing. The tragic thing, like any other addiction, is that the people that get addicted to it, and gambling is addictive to some people, can ruin families, ruin marriages, hurt children, a lot of things. Bad things can happen, and there's a lot of, I think, antisocial behaviors that go along with the whole scene.
Ontario?
I'm just looking at our packet. There's a letter of support here from Jim Plackey from Fairbanks, supporting passage of the bill. He's talking about the creation of the construction jobs and how he thinks that that would be a good thing. So he's supporting the bill. I know Mr. Plackey, and I bet he has no idea of how IGRA works and how, if we if we take a step that seems to be controlled in Anchorage, one specific site, under the control of the local electorate in Anchorage, that it tips off or starts off a process where the Secretary of the Interior can force the state to enter into compacts against the state's objection.
Or even decide the terms.
Decide the terms. And the issue of the vote in Anchorage, that's a local vote in Anchorage that has statewide implications.
Right.
And so it just seems like there's, you know, if Congress were to take action, and that's one of the suggestions in Mr. Mitchell's memo here, that if Congress would clear up the issue of what is native land, what is tribal land in the state of Alaska, that could help us have some assurance on what we would be starting off here. But I can tell you the issue, you know, the issue of tribal lands in the state of Alaska is hugely contentious in the Congress. And even with our current powerful delegation of Congress, we're not likely to get the limiting language that we would need.
Mr. Green?
Yes, Chairman Seekins, Senator Terrio, I believe that you have to look at Indian gaming and wherever it's been and what it's done, not only for the Indians, but for the surrounding area. It has really taken them off of welfare, taken them off of dependency upon federal government. But every state that has a percentage that goes to the state, whether it be Minnesota or California, and they have to have a compact with the state and in order to have an Indian casino. And I think that would be a long-term process, but that's why I put in the sunset provision in the bill.
I think, too, what Senator Terrio was saying about the compact is that if the state proposes a compact and the native group doesn't like it, then a whole series of events starts to take place. Goes down through additional negotiation, goes down to mediation, and finally, if the state doesn't want to agree, then the federal government imposes the terms of the compact over and above any state objection. I think that's one of the major concerns with the compact. Yes, you have to have a compact, but that compact can be forced on the state against the terms that the state wants once it's kicked over the edge, so to speak. So I think that's the danger to which Senator Terrio was speaking. Mm-hmm. And that,
Mr. Chairman, I have no idea. Once you go over that line,
right.
I don't know that with a sunset you can get back.
Yeah. I'm not sure you can either. And sunsetting something and I'm not sure that would do it either, but anyhow, go ahead. If you have any additional comments,
yeah, I'd like to, Senator Seekins, I'd like to respond just by saying that if in the state, that the state's terms would be the same as the borough's term, which is 17-3, which is a fortune, and in many of these rural areas, getting that much back, and the very high cost in that bill are so many things in order to have gaming in the state. All the cost is borne by the casino. The cost, and no government job has got one bit of cost to it, and. I think, and I'm a firm belief that we should have it. That's all.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Is there any other further testimony from any in the audience? Sir? Take the other chair there if you'd like next to Mr. Green.
Yep.
Thank you, Ms. Green, for your time.
Thank you for your time. I really do.
Morning. If you put yourself on the record, we'll hear your testimony.
My name is Guy Warren. I'm the stated clerk of the Presbytery of Alaska. On behalf of the Presbytery, I come before this committee to express our sincere opposition to the approval of House Bill 552. The Presbytery of Alaska consists of the 15-member churches of the Presbyterian Church USA from Yakutat in the north to Metlakatla in the south, and includes the communities of Klawak, Metlakatla, and Cake. We believe that this bill represents a significant step toward situations which will not be in the best interests of the state government or the citizens which it serves. While we know that approval of this legislation could provide some new funding to meet the state's financial needs and perhaps new employment, we also believe that the costs the state will incur attempting to repair the social ills that gambling brings with it will more than consume that new funding and remove any real benefit from any new employment. These social ills include increased domestic violence, various psychological and social problems, and an increased incidence of suicide. One example of the increased rate of suicide we fear might occur is seen in Nevada's Clark County, which is the home of Las Vegas. During the year 2002, their coroner's office reported 295 suicides. Similar numbers were seen in previous years. Las Vegas leads the nation in this most depressing statistic. We believe it would be prudent and only right for the legislature to seek detailed and independently researched estimates on these costs before taking the steps which would force the state to pay them. This legislation will see serious casino gambling introduced to our state prior to that research. The people of the state have spoken on the matter of gambling, and they spoke loudly. A proposal to set up an Alaska gambling board was presented to the people in 1990. This measure was defeated by over 40,000 votes, almost a 2-to-1 margin. It might be noted that the bill now before this body includes language for a local election before plans for a casino could proceed. While an appropriate addition, it is not adequate. The proposed legislation so roundly defeated in 1990 included a similar local election clause. Finally, if the committee has any question as to the possibility of the social ills our group is concerned about, I would simply ask you to consider these facts. The tax revenues that will be paid by this proposed casino, the salaries for those employed by this casino, and all of the other costs incurred by this casino will be paid by those who visit and lose at this casino. Some of these losses will be from those simply engaged in an expensive recreational pursuit. However, I am certain, and there is no shortage of anecdotal information on this, that a significant amount of these losses will come from people who are destroying their personal finances, their families, and as seen in Las Vegas, sometimes quite literally themselves. Our state's situation is not nearly so desperate as to take the significant gamble this bill proposes. We have the largest state savings account in the country. We have scenic beauty that Louisiana, Mississippi, and Nevada can only dream of, and we have natural resources in an abundance found nowhere else. We need to find solutions to our problems. We don't need to create new ones. Building this casino and the others that will almost certainly follow, as has been noted here, will create problems and not solve them. Thank you.
Senator Hogan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My study of Alaska history tells me that the Presbyterians have been involved in the Native communities in Alaska for a very, very long time. And you know, there's a lot of, I had a pastor, I think he was a Presbyterian pastor. Are they pastors in Presbyterian?
Yeah.
Came in from what, one of the islands, I think it was Gamble or something. He asked me, he said, what can we do to help with the suicide problem? Is there anything, do you have any ideas? And it was, we had a very pleasant, I mean, it was a very sincere conversation. And I said, you know, so, and it was a big problem. And he thought he saw the suicide rate going down, but he started talking about all the people that, you know, he's known in a few years, short years he's been out there. That, and I suggested, well, you know, there was no real private sector economy. I said, you know, I said, maybe you could get like a, and it was the only thing I could come up with, some kind of a cultural thing where, you know, teach young people to hunt in the old traditional ways for walrus or something, you know, instead of, cause everybody uses guns now, and maybe we can get a whole society, or give them something besides, you know, what they had to do. And I think if we bring gambling into those places or casino type places, and I'm not suggesting a big casino is going to open up in those little places, but it just, I think it just takes, people are bored out there, the money that they have goes into those, and the social ills from that, those situations I really grieve for, and there's a lot of unintended consequences of this bill. So, and anyway, got any comments on that?
Mr. Chair, with regards to the gentleman's comments, I think we would be in full agreement with it. We understand that, and those who study the statistics of the state will understand that we have to deal with a number of social ills. We are, I think, a particularly vulnerable area for a number of reasons, and I think adding gambling in this form certainly will seek to make those situations worse, certainly won't improve it any. I would note that I have had discussions with church leaders from other denominations. Hopefully there was a letter, I have a copy of it, that was made available to you last Friday, from the Catholic bishops also expressing their opinion against this legislation. And I would agree with the gentleman that, that we have enough problems here. We really don't need this one added to the mix. We have a lot of good things for us, and this is going to contribute to that.
Thank you very much for your testimony this morning. Appreciate it. Anyone else in the audience that wishes a testimony on this bill today? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. And at this point, I see no further business before the committee today, but we will dismiss at the call of the chair.